I'm going to read from anonymous text shared in the network that must be broadcast for the safety of our groups. Probably interspersed with my own commentary to keep my brain working. Here's where I'm going to start. This morning is Frigidag, July 9th, 2021, which is 6 ik or 6 wind, 13, 0, 8, 12, 2. This author writes, if people could read the impact on practice of wicked problems and unpredictable futures by Linda Markowskate and Peter Goodyear, chapter 4 from the book Challenging Future Practice Possibilities, or the first several pages, and Sins Invalid, Why We Commit to Mixed Ability Organizing, these are 8 large print pages, it might open the door to understanding some of where I'm coming from. I'm seeking to build a coalition of solidarity to assist would-be faculty and I with transforming their seemingly impossible situations where what actually exists is changeable circumstances that requires specific learning-oriented teamwork that centers the wisdom of survivors of severity who know how to navigate the cracks in the system and can show others how. I'm thinking a lot of the metaphor of firefighting. Just as a two-person team can't put out a large skyscraper fire, nor can a 1,000-person audience, the right kind of team size and composition is needed. The problem is, this doesn't exist in a world with a steel wall between degreed professionals and the most marginalized, people whose lives and safety are at stake. So this needs to be facilitated as a learning experiment, like workshopping a curriculum design process. Paulo Freire wrote about how problem-posing education, dialogue among people of different backgrounds focused on transforming real people's situations, is the path to liberating education and liberation of consciousness. Freirean-based critical pedagogy, the challenges of limit situations and critical transitivity, Shudak and Avosa, 2015. Part 2 onward gets to the point. Nev Jones called for similar in her Psychiatric Times interview, Phenomenology, Power, Polarization, and the Discourse on Psychosis. Quote, I often think that if we knew each other as human beings rather than caricatured identity groups, whether service users, activists, or psychiatrists, we would actually find a lot of common ground, or could. Build common ground, that is. Also, through dialogue, everyone learns to think more deeply and with more nuance about the issues at hand. At the broadest level, the problem is really the problem of social hierarchies. Hierarchies of marginalization and exclusion. There is collective pain, and also individual pain and distrust and anger. There seems to me so much potential for deep listening and systemic rethinking or redesign work. I often feel particularly painfully aware of the almost endless opportunities for dialogue, but also the lack of meaningful opportunities to do so, end quote. I'm pausing now to make this text larger so that my eyes can do their work more resiliently. How do I do it? You can hang out with me while I discover the solution. Here it is. Text size. Thank you, Telegram Messenger, who has been repairing recently a number of functions we have had trouble with over the years. We have had certain small glitches that have been occurring since we started using Telegram, and they've been disappearing. Gratitude to Telegram's development team. There we go. Now the text is larger. Now the light is better. I know this is going to change how the video looks, and that's okay. Ooh. We're okay. Okay. A lot of rehab has brought us to this place where I can do this kind of broadcast in this way. Gratitude and blessings to the network that has aided me. From this anonymous author, I will continue reading. One problem I see is the total marginalization of my friends and collaborators, and the need for a deep dive into the reality I'm inhabiting, trying to bridge these worlds, similar to an anthropologist in a foreign land. But to me, the situations I'm in the middle of are where humanity is headed very soon without transformation. For me, the foreign land is the ways people whose lives are not immediately at stake seem to think about, or simply don't think about, what leads to so many deaths wrongly chalked up to mental illness, substance abuse, health problems, and accidents, as opposed to fatalities due to pernicious ignorance, silencing, and I don't know what to do. This experience that so many of us have, I don't know what to do. Given my friends and collaborators' lives are imminently at stake, I see issues similar to epistemic exploitation. Berenstain, 2016, if people don't mobilize the power of teamwork, or at least teeth-clenched teamwork, TV tropes, to coordinate safe residential spaces for them. Berenstain writes, in addition to being cognitively costly, unrecognized, and unpaid, the work that marginalized people provide through epistemic exploitation is frequently dismissed by those who demand it. Nothing comes of it. Oppressors demand labor and then leave the fruits of the labor to spoil and perish. The privileged receive social recognition from their newfound knowledge and self-improvement that are rarely conferred on the marginalized persons who produce this knowledge. Epistemic exploitation thus bestows benefits on the privileged while the marginalized bear the costs. End quote. Whistler, 2020, makes a further point relevant in an acutely life-threatening circumstance. Quote, it is a diversion of precious energy for disabled philosophers to have to respond to claims based purely on ableist assumptions, especially when our claims seem to receive little uptake. Nonetheless, it is difficult to allow ableist claims to stand unchallenged. This is the double bind of epistemic exploitation. Disabled people's lives are literally at stake, while other people simply are not put in the position of having to advocate for the value of their lives. This is taken as a given. Whistler quotes Elizabeth Barnes. It's a strange thing, an almost unnatural thing, to construct careful, analytically rigorous arguments for the value of your own life, or for the bare intelligibility of the claims made by an entire civil rights movement. End quote. This author continues. Mental health professionals, like nearly all degreed professionals, often hit points of thinking, I don't know what to do, to help their clients. Active collaboration with my friends and collaborators, and I can give a lot of the answers. This is centering the most marginalized. It's pursuing collective liberation, and it's a key path to learning in ways not possible through lectures and text alone. Lectures and text can tell the story of this kind of learning after doing it, helping people left to die by the systems, professions, and organizations funded to help people, despite their well-meaning efforts, is a form of personal and societal transformation that cannot be replaced. Too many people are unnecessarily being silenced, suffering and dying, who actually have the motivation and many answers for bringing transformative change. It's an uphill battle to coordinate safe, accessible housing and provide, It's an uphill battle to coordinate safe, accessible housing and find professional help with safety planning assistance, even with income streams to do so, when clever, well-resourced perpetrators are seeking to reestablish coercive control and silencing through threats and intimidation. Medical providers have to be coaxed to barely help. Mental health professions aren't used to realizing their credibility and advocacy is the biggest way they can help many people. And the public is widely educated with Peter Singer's views on disabilities. Quote, Singer invites us into his conceptual world in which the empathetic imaginations of non-disabled people carry more weight than the testimonies of disabled people. Within the terms of Singer's conceptual world, one is unable to make sense of how his position could be harmful. After all, his goal is to prevent harm by preventing people with severe impairments from existing. Weisler, 2020. Our anonymous author continues. What this looks like in practice. Number one, Health Justice Commons has a medical abuse hotline in the planning stages based on Carrie Ann Lucas unnecessarily dying due to medication being denied, causing a snowballing series of consequences. Quote, withholding access to healthcare or life-sustaining medication is medical torture. It profoundly violates our most basic human rights and dignity. Withholding access to healthcare is one of the most prevalent and pervasive forms of social control and institutional violence of our times. Unquote. This has happened to my friends and collaborators as well, with mental health thinking being a big part of the problem. The problems are not only about medication or what people would call abuse, they're about every day just doing my job, meaning shunning and silencing rather than witnessing dialogue and advocacy. This is about seemingly mundane things like accessible housing and things people wrongly believe peace or... This is about seemingly mundane things like accessible housing and things people wrongly believe police are the answer for, like physical safety from perpetrators. Two. This is also about access to collaboration to help others and change things rather than being seen as a costly or annoying burden or a lost cause. That's what's happening to so many people with so much capacity to change things, including Kathy Forth, whose writings continue to be relevant to understanding how to help, how spitballing, have you tried this? Have you tried this? Have you tried this? Spitballing. How spitballing can totally sabotage people in need of health, people in need of help, by Kathy Forth. There is a page and a half long forum post from a forum that's part of a philanthropy movement partly based on Peter Singer's ideas, so many people are stuck in contexts where they are blocked from access to the collaboration they need to survive and help others. And I don't know if this author mentions here, but I'm going to mention myself. Kathy Forth committed suicide after publishing at great length how this tremendous suffering could be avoided, and she was very forthright in communicating with her communities about what was happening to her, which they somehow could not understand or recognize or see, though she produced so much work that could have prevented her death. For me and for many of us, for me, Max, we see this all the time, where suicides are thought to be some inexplicable brokenness of that living being. Why would they do that? It doesn't make any sense. But the people who have eventually committed suicide have really communicated about what was needed. And somehow others have missed it. But it's so clear, it's so explicit. We continue to have massively accumulating evidence of this everywhere we look. And when you start to recognize it, you will see it everywhere you look. Anonymous author continues, number three. Just because giving suggestions can become a sort of DDoS attack, denial of service attack. With the internet, there's a form of digital attack where a set of computers sends a whole lot of traffic to one particular website. So much traffic, like automated traffic. Using a bot or using a bunch of bots or AI or something, a lot of traffic that overwhelms the website's, the web server's ability to serve the website to others, so that then the website cannot be found because it has received so much artificial traffic that it cannot receive traffic from people who are visiting it as people who want that information. DDoS attack is the term. I'm missing one of the letters, but denial of service, we can look it up later. That's basically the description of it. I'll start over this paragraph. Number three, just because giving suggestions can become a sort of DDoS attack, spitballing, as Kathy wrote in her suicide essay, doesn't mean abandoning knowledgeable people to die unheard is the answer. Christy Dotson is one of the most aware philosophers I've found addressing the silencing problem. Feminists We Love, Dr. Christy Dotson, quote, "Even at 15, I knew that kind of silence wasn't right. At that time, I experienced silence and silencing so many times in so many ways that I couldn't describe them all if I tried." Laughs in brackets. This quote continues, "Something strange happened then, though. I began to see silence and silencing everywhere. I watched the frustration boil over in fellow high school students. Often they were rendered inarticulate by a school system built with a systematic disregard for youth of color that was genuinely debilitating. It slowly dawned on me that forced and coerced silencing additionally victimized most, if not all, people who had a history that included significant personal harm and suffering. That kind of silence and silencing made an already bad situation much, much worse. At least that is what my 15-year-old self concluded. Today, my 40-year-old self would say, in my estimation, incapacitating silence and silencing were added layers of oppression that both exacerbated an already terrible situation and extended that situation beyond reasonable expectations. In other words, 25 years later, 2 master's degrees, a PhD, and years of fighting my way out of poverty, I still agree with my 15-year-old self, just with fancier words. Laughs in brackets. Silencing matters. Being heard matters. End quote. Thank you, Christy Dotson. This is the end of this segment that I have been reading. It has taken so many repeated trajectories and years of rehabilitating and then starting from scratch over and over and over again for me, Max, to be able to read this to you. Many have witnessed me trying to do this, and it's been so difficult and painful, and I need this light turned up a little bit. There we go. I'm trying to do it slowly so that I don't make the screen flash. When we receive this kind of text, any of this kind of text from our organizers throughout our community network, often it is never able to get further to a platform where more people can recognize it. Most of us are severely disabled. All of us in this network are severely affected in ways that limit our ability to show up, and yet we show up. So those who are not severely disabled and those who do not consider themselves severely affected can recognize a new potential strength in this. Whatever you think you cannot do, you can do it, and you can do it without waiting for things to get worse first. Because we have found our gains in function by meeting the very worst circumstances of hardship, the very worst of extreme physical trauma and violence to our bodies, protracted violence, repeated violence over years or decades, and some of us for our whole lives. Many members of our network have been experiencing abuse and gaslighting and violence since they were babies. They have never had a break from it. But they are here lending their expertise and their knowledge to all others who would exercise the respect to come into contact with us, to be in respectful discourse with us. And when we do that, what we are able to do starts out astonishing and becomes tremendously nourishing. How long have I been recording? 23 minutes and 27 seconds. I'm going to end this segment, and I'm going to publish it. Thank you to this anonymous author, and to all our other anonymous authors and non-anonymous authors that you can find by please visiting Telegram Messenger. This URL will help you find it in your browser, t.me/intuitivepublicradio. You can contact us to be on the air publicly by using this email address, public@intuitive.pub. That's P-U-B, like public. And you can contact me privately by messaging me, t.me/MaxMorris, M-A-X-M-O-R-R-I-S, is my Telegram profile, which is my communications aid for severe neurological disabilities. I'm so proud of how I'm showing up this morning. And if you need to email me, I am striving to answer emails best of my ability. My private email address is max@intuitive.pub. Thank you for tuning in. Ah, yes, that's good. All right, got it.